So neural networks imitate how a brain works with neurons. And so neural networks is a way to imitate that. Just it's to make computers learn from data as our brain learns from data.
Well, hey, everyone. My name is Jeff DeVerter, and I'm the Chief Technology Evangelist for us here at Rackspace Technology. But more importantly, I'm your host for this episode of Cloud Talk Live, where I have the great pleasure of introducing you to Dr. Ronan Dar. Now, Ronan is the CTO for an organization called Run AI, where their specialty is about making that underlying infrastructure, those GPUs and such, to be much more efficient than they are, well, without their tools and technology. Now, if you're not an expert in all things LLMs and training models and neural networks, well, don't worry about it. Just get comfortable. Ronan's going to explain everything to you. And as always, stick around to the very end because, well, I've got a few thoughts on the episode as well as some announcements for what's coming up very shortly. All right, everyone, let's get into this week's episode of Cloud Talk Live.
The line between application and infrastructure is virtually invisible in these modern apps.
The kind of thing that a global computing fabric with immense resilience and scale can deliver without even breaking a sweat.
That's really what the promise of the cloud's always been.
It's all focused on the business objectives. That's where we craft the plan.
In the tech world, we like to celebrate the lone genius, but I'm just going to tell you right now, they're just the convenient face as founders to focus on.
Welcome to Cloud Talk. Here's your host, Jeff DeVerter.
Ronan, I'm excited to be able to visit with you a little bit today. So you are the CTO with a really interesting company. Why don't you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah. So first of all, thank you for having me, Jeff. So I'm the CTO, co-founder of a company called Run AI. We started in 2018. Right? So we're running for the last 5.5 years. We're in the AI infrastructure and software space, and we help companies developing AI to manage and to utilize and to get access to their AI infrastructure. So AI infrastructure is really critical for companies developing AI. It's expensive, it's scarce, and it's really difficult to utilize that infrastructure. So we're helping them with our software stack.
Well, I think one way that may help folks understand exactly the space where you guys are in is let's describe what it takes for somebody to pull together an AI model and turn it into an application. You know, it starts with, well, it always starts with data, doesn't it? Somebody comes along and says, here's this pile of data, and we want to, maybe we're going to build a generative chat type of an offering on top of that data. So they may choose. And maybe they're going to go after their CRM, going to get some customer data. They want to be able to ask questions of their customers and get some answers back. And to do that, they need a large language model. And a large language model is the intelligence behind the scenes that is that multi-layer neural network that's going to help ultimately the software choose the next word to be able to answer the question correctly. But to do all this stuff, you take these large language models, but they have to be trained with the specific data sets. What is training of data, Ronan?
Let's go back for a second before, you know, all the LLM language models hype, right? So before that, with traditional deep learning models, you got companies getting into AI and trying to get some value with the AI, with deep learning models. So usually, the way it goes in enterprises is that it's experimentation way of doing things. So you're trying different ideas of how AI can help and how AI can bring value, either internally for internal usage, you know, like improving processes and things like that, or externally and providing more value to your customers. So running AI initiatives starts with an idea, and then it goes to gathering data and to training a model and experimenting with the model, experimenting with the data, and checking if there is value, if there is value that can be created. And so that was traditionally, it always involved training models, right? But then what happened in the last year with language models is that OpenAI introduced ChatGPT to the entire world.
Right.
And suddenly you have those huge models which are really generic, and you can ask them any question, right? So suddenly all the world can get access to that powerful capabilities of large language models. And now, not always you need to train models to start to get some value with AI. So what we're seeing right now is companies using large language models, either from companies providing those foundational models like OpenAI and Anthropic and those companies, or they're trying to deploy open source models and experimenting with those models. So once you can prompt those models and you can ask them questions and you can start to experiment with them and start to try to get some insights from your data that you have, then that's another way. So we're seeing three different companies today in AI. So one type of company is those that are developing and training models from scratch and developing those foundational models like OpenAI and Anthropic and those companies. We see, from the other hand, companies who are just, you know, prompting language models and not really training them, not really fine-tuning them, but doing like what's so-called in-context learning. So asking the language models questions and trying to get insights from that. And then the third type of companies is those who are trying to fine-tune existing models, right? So taking LLMs and trying to customize them and specialize them to their own data. So those are the three types of companies that we see.
Yeah, and ultimately though, under the covers of the software of the AI, the training, the interface that people are going to use to get some value out of that data in an AI context is hardware. And there's a couple of different types of hardware. Of course, there's general computing hardware that's behind the scenes that runs a lot of these applications. But then there's very specialized hardware behind it. We call them GPUs. We call them that because their original use in life, of course, graphical processing units. They were designed for gamers because the math behind creating those images on the screen in real time was super complex, and it was very specialized for that specific use case. But as AI really started to come into its own, you know, we know that AI as a construct and as a science project, I'll even call it, is, you know, multi-decades old. It really has been in the past decade, where there's been some really incredible transformation. And that hardware designed for the gamers turned out to be really similar behind the math of training those models.
Right. So as you say, right, like computing power and computing resources are really critical for AI. And what we saw in the last 10 years, as you say, is this trend of more and more compute needed for training state-of-the-art AI models. So I think it started around 2012, 2013, where that was the point in time where the big breakthrough of deep learning happened in the industry, right? Mm-hmm. So AI and deep learning was known in the academia, but in the industry, it happened around 2012, 2013 with the ImageNet computation. The breakthrough happened when researchers from Toyota University figured out that they can use a new hardware called GPUs to train bigger models faster, much faster than just using, you know, regular traditional computing resources like CPUs.
Yeah.
So back then it was really difficult to use GPUs to train models, right? So they had to do a lot of work to do that, right? A lot of programming. So what they showed is that with two GPUs, essentially, they can build a bigger model with a somewhat new architecture, and they could train it much faster than before. So they just were able to show stunning results with that architecture, and that was the big breakthrough. People saw that GPUs, that new hardware, is not just good for gaming, for linear processing, but it's also good for AI, because AI and deep learning involves a lot of linear computation. So with GPUs, you can do all of that, and you can actually accelerate those linear computation really, really significantly. So that was the big breakthrough. People got into the industry, you know, a lot of researchers from Google, from the industry, from Microsoft, and people from the academia. And we saw that trend of people training bigger models with more parameters, using more GPUs, using more data to get better results and to solve bigger problems. So we saw that trend in computer vision, right? It started with convolutional neural net to get insights from images and videos. And if the state of the art model back in 2012, 2013, the ImageNet, the AlexNet model was trained on two GPUs. And 5 years later, around 5 years later, we got that the state of the art computer vision model was trained on hundreds of GPUs.
Yeah.
Much bigger models, attaining much, much bigger, much better results. And so we saw that in computer vision. That's for me, it was the first wave of AI. The second wave of AI came afterwards in natural language processing. So around 2017, 2018, an amazing paper from Google researchers came out. Attention is all you need. And they presented their new architecture for language models, the transformers. So they showed that that with transformer architecture, you can get much better results in terms of processing language, right, and generating language.
And that, so that was a pretty fundamental change in the approach to AI when they moved to presented the transformer model, because that's really where we started to see some exponential quality changes in what AI was able to generate.
Exactly. So we saw if the main use case for AI before that was mainly around computer vision and about classification problems, right?
Yeah.
Classifying data in images and videos. And then with language models, there was a new capability coming out in terms of models that can actually understand language and actually generate language. And that was an amazing breakthrough. And researchers from Google and researchers from OpenAI then came out and trained the BERT model and the GPT-1 model. So GPT-1 was trained back then on hundreds of GPUs.
Yeah.
5 years later, GPT-4, trained by OpenAI, according to rumors, was trained on more than 20,000 GPUs.
That is that's not even logarithmic increase in usage. I mean, in GPUs that are being used, that's incredible amount of numbers.
Yeah, that's an incredible amount of numbers. And actually, people are studying it. And there were papers coming out showing that trend, you know, of computational power grows for training state-of-the-art models. And the number, I think, is 8 orders of magnitude growth in computational requirements for training state-of-the-art models compared to 10 years ago, right? So 8 orders of magnitude, that's 100 million times more computing power required to train state-of-the-art models.
That's incredible. In 10 years. And can you imagine, and most of that happening on NVIDIA gear, can you imagine being a company like NVIDIA that started just trying to help gamers game better? Because that in and of itself was a great marketplace to be in. I mean, games are billions of dollar business these days, and it was a fine market to be after. And then all of a sudden, you're the company that generates the world's leading processors to enable the world's leading technology. What a place to be.
Right. NVIDIA is an amazing company with a big vision. And I think they saw that vision already in 27, 28. They developed CUDA for general computing, right? Mm-hmm. So they developed that as a software framework for anyone to develop applications on top of GPUs, applications that are not necessarily gaming applications.
Yeah.
So they saw that. They saw that a lot of linear computation, a lot of application using heavy and mathematical processing could use GPUs to just accelerate those applications. And then AI came, right? And those researchers from Toronto University, they used CUDA to train those new models, and that breakthrough happened. That was amazing.
Yeah. Hey, and before we take the conversation even farther down the road of the challenges then that come with the GPUs, as you used a couple of phrases before, I'd love to define for the audience. So deep learning. I mean, what is deep learning? How would you define that for the audience?
Okay. So
take a deep breath. Get comfy. Here we go. All right, everybody, get a sip of your whatever your favorite beverage is you've got handy, because here we go.
So deep learning is a way to for machines to learn from data, mm-hmm. and the mathematical model of how the machines are actually learning is what people call neural networks. So neural networks imitate the way our brain works with neurons. And so neural networks is a way to imitate that. Just it tries to make computers learn from data as our brain learns from data.
Yeah.
So mathematically wise, deep learning uses neural networks, and the sense of deep is in the fact that neural networks usually are formed with layers. So you have layers in which insights are being generated from the data. And people saw that having deep models with many layers can provide deep insights also from data. So deep learning was developed in the academia already in the 80s, 90s, right? But the big breakthrough in the industry happened, as I said before, in 2012. So that's deep learning. And now transformers are also some kind of a deep learning model, although they have a very specialized architecture, an architecture that is really oriented for language. So transformers, language models are much more oriented for getting insights from language.
Interesting, you know, because a lot of folks, and I mentioned this earlier on, this is a technology and a thought that has been around really since the dawn of computing, the thought of how, from a conceptual point, how computers could be taught to... and what would appear to be think for themselves, to be able to make these sorts of decisions, to be able to generate content. But there have been limitations to that. Earlier on, there were no computers. The computers that then showed up were slow. As we mentioned before, any kind of AI rides on top of data, whether that's data that's already there or experiential data that can then be used to train further. And when you don't have computers or very limited computers, the amount of data is lacking. So it has taken all of these years for computers to become powerful enough, ubiquitous enough, the data to be large enough, the data to be centralized enough, and the compute to be at a point where it can take this stuff to this next level. And that really is, we keep dancing around this 2011, 2012, 2013 timeline, but that really is the time when it all came together. You think about, we use the term cloud an awful lot, but cloud really speaks also to a scale and capability, and in large part, I would credit the clouds coming together and people utilizing, having the access to inexpensive storage that allowed them to amass the amount of data, and that combined with the breakthroughs in the technology of AI itself around these neural networks, but then also the pace and the power of compute, as we talk about with the GPUs available from NVIDIA. It really was a pretty key time that I think really just a few people, few organizations recognized what we were going to be experiencing here in 2023.
I totally agree. So as you said, it was a point in time where there was enough data and the compute was available and it was easy to connect between them and the algorithms were there and you could develop those breakthroughs in AI. And you mentioned cloud, right? So as we see it, cloud, the cloud was built for running microservices, right? Running applications on commodity CPU. And right now in AI, it seems that the cloud needs to somewhat rebuild, because AI workloads are different than microservices, traditional applications. AI workloads are much more compute intensive.
Yeah.
And they need GPUs. They need those new AI accelerators. They typically need a lot of those. And they might run on distributed nodes. So that's something new. And from what we see in RunAI, there are gaps in terms of how the software stack in the clouds today is offering compared to what AI workloads need, right? So so that's a lot of what we do in RunAI, just building that software stack, covering those gaps, and bringing those capabilities that are needed for running AI workloads in the cloud. Yeah.
So, you know, as you've here we sit at the, towards the end of 2023, and Microsoft is in the middle of their big Microsoft Ignite conference. Google Next was just a few months ago, and we're on the eve of AWS reInvent. Now you have cloud providers who are creating their own AI accelerators, their own silicon, they're making their own CPUs, they're making their own GPUs that I've seen yet, but accelerators, yes. And that is in large part because AI is now finding itself embedded in literally almost everything that we do and that we touch. Content is being generated for us, whether that's text, whether it's video, whether it's images. It is, in Microsoft's words, becoming the co-pilot that helps you do the things that you need to do on a day-to-day basis. And to your point, Ronan, this type of computation is expensive from a processing point of view. And that means that it is valuable. And it's valuable because it takes a lot to run, but it's also valuable because it these GPUs that, you know, as you, to your point before, you know, initial models being trained on handfuls of GPUs, GPT-1 on hundreds of, and now GPT-4, I think you mentioned on 20,000 by rumor GPUs. So these are a commodity, meaning they're not everybody has access to them. They are not cheap. And so getting the most out of them becomes extraordinarily important. And that sort of is where RunAI starts to show up. And you mentioned in a chat we had before that your initial thoughts were a play. You guys were looking for a place to play on the hardware side on the AI world, but you realized there was an opportunity on the software side. Maybe unpack that a bit for us.
Yeah. So when we started RunAI, it's me and my co-founder Omri, and we started RunAI in 2018. We knew back then that we want to be in the AI space, right? We saw that there is a big new breakthrough and that technology is amazing and it's going to change the world. And we wanted to be there. And both me and Omri are coming from hardware background. And both of us, I spent time in hardware companies. I know what it is to build a chip. So the initial idea for us was to build an AI chip. Right, to build we saw that the needs are different. So the initial idea was, let's build a chip dedicated for AI, but we saw that the space was really crowded back then. And then we also saw those problems in terms of the software stack that runs on top of GPUs, on top of AI accelerators. And we saw that GPUs are relatively new in the data centers. They were known for for gaming applications, but not as a mainstream way to compute workloads in the cloud. And we saw that there are gaps in terms of how the software stack was built. It was built mainly for running commodity, running microservices applications on commodity CPUs. But then with GPUs, it's totally different. So we saw the gaps there and we decided to go into the we understood really well the gaps, and we started to solve it, right? So we got into the cloud native world. So Kubernetes, is nowadays is the state of the art infrastructure management software. Mm-hmm. And we saw the gaps in Kubernetes, and we developed a lot of technology around scheduling, around orchestration, around optimizations for GPUs. And we've built the software stack for Run AI.
Amazing. So, and that really does get back to the, you know, not to oversimplify, but, you know, this precious resource of the GPUs. How do we make sure that a company who has invested in them gets, and I like to say, 110% out of their investment? You know, you can hope to get 100%, but I think you guys have figured out a way that they can maybe even get a little bit more out of it.
Yeah. So, right. So, so what we saw in the last year is this rush for buying GPUs and using GPUs for LLMs, right? OpenAI introduced ChatGPT. Everyone saw the amazing capabilities of language models. And a lot of companies just went and to buy GPUs, secure access to GPUs, because they wanted to get into the LLM space and use LLM, develop LLMs, right? And so it created a big jump in the demand for GPUs while the supply was not there. So in the last year, we saw this shortage of GPUs, and a lot of companies had trouble to get access to GPUs. It still happens, right? For example, our engineers, sometimes if they want to spin up a GPU in the cloud, GPUs from the new generation, like H100, sometimes they wait for a few days until they're getting access to just one GPU, right? So it's still really difficult to get access to GPUs.
It's amazing. It's like the mainframe days of old, where you had to wait around for time to get your application processed. You could write it, but you had to wait a few days until you could actually run it.
Yeah. So what we see companies doing today is securing founders' access to GPUs. So it's less about spinning up GPUs on demand whenever they are needed. It's more of let's reserve blocks of hundreds, if not thousands, of GPUs in the cloud, on premises, whatever. But it's that way of securing GPUs and building AI infrastructure right now.
Amazing stuff. So these are the types of problems then that Run AI is helping to solve for the world. And that really is, if I were to condense it down, how do they get the most out of the investment that they have? Again, whether they're buying them physically or whether they're securing them in the cloud and want to make sure that they don't let go of them so somebody else doesn't take them, and that they're getting the most out of them. Am I oversimplifying the mission here?
I think it's basically around those things, right? So people, it starts with companies trying to secure for themselves access to GPUs. Yeah. But then within the organization, you're getting sometimes, you know, some enterprises have hundreds of ML engineers and data scientists, and each one of them wants to train their own models to run their own LLMs, and they need GPUs. So how those GPUs are being allocated to the different users, and how those users are actually utilizing those GPUs and not just leaving them idle because they don't want to get, you know, leave their GPUs aside, right? So it becomes a problem not just for the organization, but also for the users themselves on how they can get scalable access to GPUs.
Yeah, and incredible stuff. So, you know, having the thought in 2017 that the future is in AI, you know, you were still 3 years, 4 years, 5 years ahead of where the world really recognized that this is the place that everything is going to center around. I mean, there isn't any technology company today that doesn't speak of AI as a core component of what they do, even fit for purpose SaaS-based vendors, as well as your large hyperscale cloud providers who are saying, here, our AI infrastructure and software on top of that is the place to be. So then I'm going to ask you to look in your crystal ball. Here we sit at the end of 2023. Where is AI going to take us? Not where are we taking AI, but where is AI going to take us in 2024 and beyond?
So Okay, good question. Right now, what we see around language models is those generative use cases. So there are a few use cases that are amazing and now happening. Use cases like generating code, right? Software engineers using large language models to generate their code, right? To generate tests, for example. So that's like a main use case, just code generation. And also generating text and content, you know, marketing people, product people, just generating text, generating emails, generating, you know, all kinds of those stuff. And that's a main use case as well for language models. I think what we're going to see is also a way for language models to get insights from data, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a big use case on how you can connect data to language models and then just prompt the model with questions using natural language, using natural language, and getting insights from that data. So you don't need any more, you know, SQL. You don't need to know a programming language to get insights from data. You can just use natural language. I think that's something that will also happen, you know, next year and in the next few years. Another big thing, I think, is just interfaces, user interfaces. So we got used to graphical user interfaces, right? Or command line interfaces. But now we're getting this new user interface, which is just natural language, right? You can speak
just
to your
computer.
It's a
conversation. Isn't that incredible?
It's a just, yeah, conversation. It's like me and you speaking, right? You can speak to your computer and you can, you know, operate your computer. You can operate your application through just language. So that's amazing as well.
It really is amazing. It's quite a time to be, you know, I used to say, you know, technology was a part of a lot of the different opportunities for companies or to solve challenges. But now technology is in every opportunity and it's in every challenge. It is a part of every solution and every product that exists today. Even if you're designing the latest shovel, I mean, there's technology behind the scenes that's going to enable that, the supply chain to make sure of how it gets created and how it gets delivered. Technology is a piece of absolutely everything. And AI is at the center of it all because it is what converts this. Yeah, I would love to pick up my computer and hold it up to the screen and say, it is what converts this thing that used to take my 10 little fingers to type on it to interface with it. To your point, now I can get into the point where I can just talk to it. Instead of going to Excel and having to figure out a pivot table to figure out a visualization, I can literally just ask it to visualize what I want to know based on the data that it has access to.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. So image generation, just visual generation, that's amazing as well. And you're absolutely right, right? So we will see in the next years a huge increase in the productivity of you know, of everyone. Everyone will be more productive in their work, in their day-to-day life. And productivity is going to get a huge boost. And you know, I just spoke today to one of our ops people, right? So we have a few ops people. And they are using regularly ChatGPT. Just ChatGPT helps them, you know, just we're doing simple, small stuff like, you know, taking data and just transforming the data into data that you put in your Excel sheets, right? So that's just small thing was so difficult to do for them before. And now they can do it in like a matter of a couple of minutes, right? With ChatGPT.
Well,
so
and whether
small
it was...
things are really important.
Yeah. And whether it was hard or difficult, the fact that, or easy or hard, the fact that it was time consuming. And here's
exactly
a way to another tool for somebody to use. It's just like somebody says, well, that's cheating. Why would somebody do that? Well, is it any more cheating? I used a shovel example. So let's do that. Some construction guy's got to dig a hole. Should he use a shovel or should he use a backhoe? Can he get the job done faster, better, faster, or whatever? Well, use the tool that gets things done in that way. Yeah. Allow humans to do what we're great at and let's let machines do what they're great at.
Yeah, exactly. When you're using a calculator, you're not cheating. You're just
doing that
math with a calculator, right? Yeah.
That's right. Can I get a better result? Because you don't want me doing math. I'll be the first to say it. All right. We're getting close to the end of our time, but I do want to ask the question, and I love to ask this of guests as well, especially when we have an AI topic, and that is, Like any strong and powerful tool, good guys can use it for good, bad guys can use it for bad, and even good guys can use the tool in a way that may not have a positive result. But I'm talking about responsible AI. What are your thoughts around that, and how much could we, should we, you know, be managing and controlling how this technology spreads?
Yeah. It's a big topic. It's an important topic, right?
Yeah.
And I personally think that we should regulate AI. I think people today can use AI for the worst, right? Like doing things that they can use it for good purposes and for bad purposes. People can use it for bad purposes. You have these ways today to align AI models with what you want them to do.
Yeah.
So you can align them to do good things and also bad things. So regulating that, I think that would be super important for our future as humanity. I don't know how we should regulate that, right? That's a big question.
Yeah, the devil's in the details, isn't it?
Exactly.
Well, Ronan, thank you so much for taking the time today. The company is run.ai. I would encourage all of you to run to your browser and go check those folks out. Ronan, thank you so much for taking time today to visit with me. Super fascinating what you guys are up to. You'll have to come back maybe this time next year and let's see how your predictions hold for what the future looks like and maybe what that's turned into.
Thank you so much. It was fun.
This has been Cloud Talk. You can find Cloud Talk wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And be sure to check out more content from Rackspace Solve at solve.rackspace.com.
Well, what do you think? Should AI be regulated? How are we going to find enough GPUs in this world to train all the models that there are? What solutions are you building with AI? You want to tell me about it? Well, just send us an email at solve@rackspace.com. It'll come to the whole production team, who I want to thank right now for all the help in turning out all the content that we have. Daniel Gibson on the production side. We got Megan Fretz, who is helping us on all the things social. And of course, Gracie LaPere, who steers the ship for keeping us all organized and aligned. All right, everyone. If you are listening to this before May 7th of 2024, I would love for you to connect in and watch our Solve Summit. 10 o'clock a.m. Central Time, May 7th. We are unpacking our latest bit of research, all about AI and ML. You're not going to want to miss that. If you're listening after, we'll go back into LinkedIn. You can find it in there. Just search for Rackspace, search for myself, and look for that Solve Summit. Pretty great content. I'm excited to share it with you. We also have a new format coming out very, very soon, maybe even next week. So check us out. Keep subscribed, and I'll talk to you soon.